Good morning. Today's scripture reading is Acts 2:42 to 2:47, and can be found on page 1079 in your pew Bible. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. This is the word of the Lord.
Well, I want to say the Lord be with you. You know, I'm so excited. Andrew was able to provide me a clicker for the slides. Do you know what? I can't find it. Here it is. Okay. It was in my shirt pocket. There you go. We're going to see if this will work today. Look at that. Fantastic. Hey, we've been making over the last 2 weeks an audacious claim. And that claim is this, that the new command that Jesus gave his followers at the institution of the new covenant, the Last Supper, is a command that encapsulates, in a sense, all the obedience required to love God and love the world. Heidi just read it to the kids. A new command I give you, Jesus said, that you love one another just as I have loved you. And so we've been saying that if we could do that, we would do it all. And we've been wrestling. Does that work? Does that make sense? And here's one of the tensions that I have felt in saying such a all-encompassing statement that loving one another fulfills all the Old Testament, all of what God would require of us, that God himself would be fully loved by us loving one another. And I wonder if any of you have felt the same tension, and it's this. Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he said, love one another. He didn't say, go love everybody. He didn't say, go love your enemies. He didn't go say, love the stranger. He said, love one another. And there might be this little sense that if we were to actually follow that, would we not become a kind of clique? Would we not turn ingrown and insular? Would we not become very exclusive if we were just to pour into loving one another? And you would say, Jesus taught to love your enemies, Matthew chapter 5. He taught us to love the sick and the prisoner and the stranger and the hungry, Matthew 25. The Good Samaritan parable that Holly gave to the children last week. This is all in Jesus' teaching. How does that fit with this new command to love one another? I want to explore that tension today. And here's the thing that I want you to notice. Right away, in the new command, notice, by this, Jesus says, after he says, love one another as I've loved you, by this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Notice that right away, after he gives this command to his disciples, there's a sense in which Jesus actually has on his heart all people. That somehow there will be this communication outward if we love one another, that all people will somehow know something about Jesus and, as Heidi just said a moment ago, be invited toward this community. It happens again in what we call the high priestly prayer of Jesus. This is the prayer that he prays, John 17, on the night of his suffering. And notice in verse 9 of that prayer, I am praying for them, and I'm not praying for the world, but for those whom you have given me, for they are yours. And you get that sense again of this, yeah, that seems kind of exclusive. Jesus is just going to pray just for his own, the one another, right? You keep reading the prayer, you get to verses 20 through 23. And I do not ask for these only, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they may be one, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. It continues, the glory that you have given me, I have given them, so that they may be one even as we are one. I in them, you in me, that they might become perfectly one, so that the world may know that you sent me and you loved them even as you loved me. Do you sense this kind of concentric circle happening where Jesus in John 17 says, I pray for those you've given me. And then I pray for all those who will believe in me through them, so that the whole world will be encompassed in this encounter with me. So here is my thesis today. My thesis is this, is that love, the kind of love that Jesus calls us to love, the love like he loved, there's a physics to it. That when we love each other at the center, it necessarily, irresistibly, unavoidably expands outward until literally the whole world is awash in its wake. And I want to make that point today first by observing what I call a biblical pattern. Now I'm gonna fire a hydrant at you here. I want to show you about six or seven examples of this biblical pattern where we see something at the center expanding outward. Here we go. Think about, for example, Jesus' own ministry. So he had three very close friends. Who were they? So Peter, James, and John are obviously a kind of sub-center of close friends within the 12. And then beyond the 12, that the 12 wasn't the only group of disciples. There was then the 72 that Jesus in Matthew sends out. And so he's actually commissioning a group of 72 to go out doing witness work. And then when Jesus goes up to heaven after his resurrection, they gather in the upper room. Do you know how many gathered in that room as followers of Jesus? Anybody know the number? 120, Acts chapter 1. I don't know if Jesus would have made the church growth movement books after his entire ministry, 120, marked his community. But I just want you to see that even in Jesus' pattern, there was three, and then there was 12, then there was 72, then there was 120, and then there's us today. Let me go back even further. Let's go back to a question that I love to ask. Let's go back to the very beginning of all things and with this particular question. Why do you think it was that God created the cosmos? God existed before anything was made. What prompted God to actually create anything at all? And so you might think about it for a moment. Here are some common answers. Some might say, must have been lonely for God, so he wanted company. I would say that's not a good answer, because as we understand in our Christian story, God is three persons in one and experiences in that community a koinonia. And if you remember back to our very first week, koinonia is the word of intimate relationship, this amazing relationship between Father, Son, and Spirit. So there was a sense of which, no, I would say God was not lonely. So some people might say, well, God wanted to do things, so he needed a bunch of servants. But here I would argue what I would say the self-sufficiency of God comes through to say this. God has no needs outside of himself. Listen to what Paul says in Acts 17. And he says, the God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by humans, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all humankind life and breath and everything. So I'd say no, he didn't make the world because he needed anything done. So some people say, well, maybe he made the world because he wanted to be praised. Which would be a strange way to think of God, God craving or needing to be praised. And I would argue, if we had more time on this particular sidebar, to say that even when God calls for the praise of his people, we find that it is a gift to us to praise the one who is at the center of all things. In fact, there's nothing that we can say, we can find to be the case, why God made all things except for this. And I believe this is the answer, that there was so much love between Father, Son, and Spirit, that that love spilled out and splashed out and created all things. The very existence of everything that exists is the fruit of love between Father, Son, and Spirit. Let me just say one thing while I'm at this moment. A lot of us who struggle with our sense of identity, our sense of why do I exist in the world, our sense of are we loved or not, I want us to say this profound truth. Here it is, that each of us was made not to do something. The fundamental reason why each of us exists is to be loved. And we'll find that even in our design and purpose for which we get to do things, we find that is also a love gift of the great lover of heaven. But my main point is saying, even in the story of the creation of all things, we see an exclusive, seemingly community of three who love each other so much that it results in the creation of all things. And I think that's a clue to the very nature of the reality that was created. Let's go look at some other patterns. Adam and Eve, the story in Genesis 1, 2, and 3, has this notion that all of humanity comes from the love of a first couple. I mean, God could have created all humanity all at once, but it comes from a small center of love expanding outward to all of us. Even like a baby starts with two cells in the zygote. And when a baby is born, it's estimated to have some 2 trillion cells. Every one of us is a living example of starting from a tight center and becoming outwardly more complex and more encompassing. Let's think about the story, and I'm just giving you now a list of the pattern. Let's think about the story of God choosing to rescue the entire world that had fallen away from him, and he does so by choosing a people called Israel. And this is the story of the whole Old Testament, a people chosen to be his people. And some people would hear that story and go, it seems, again, kind of exclusive, like God chooses one people, what about all the rest of the people in the world? And we think there's a kind of exclusive tone to this strategy of God until you read what we call the Abrahamic covenant. You find this in Genesis chapter 12. This is the beginning, the first father of the Hebrew nation, Abraham, who's being called, he's not even called Abraham yet. His name's Abram at this point, and he's called to go away to a land that God will give him. And here's what the scripture says. Now the Lord said to Abraham, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, so that you will be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And I will make of you a great nation, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Here's that last verse. In you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. I just want you to hear again that in the exclusive choice for God to pour himself into a particular people was not for the end of that particular people to enjoy God all to themselves, but they were meant to be a light to the nations. They were meant to be a catalyst out of which would come blessing to every family in heaven and earth. This has been God's plan. This is the nature of love starting from a center and necessarily expanding outward. How about this? Jesus' teaching about the mustard seed. This is what Jesus said. The kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed that one took and sowed in a field. It is the smallest of all seeds, but when it has grown, it is larger than all the garden plants and becomes a tree so that the birds of the air can come and make nests in its branches. Here Jesus gives us a DNA look at the very nature of the kingdom that he has brought. It starts small and tiny and seemingly insignificant, but it grows and becomes the place where the birds of the air can nest in its branches. One more. The example of the early church, and here Dan read this for us, this account again. The early church, the first followers of Jesus gathering in Jerusalem, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship. There's our word, the koinonia, the loving one another. There it was at the very center of this early community, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And now the description comes to the kind of koinonia, the practical nature of taking care of each other and helping out one another. They were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together, breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts. And they grew into an exclusive little clique, and that was the end of the church. That's not how the verse ends. It goes, what happened next? Praising God and having favor with all the people, and the Lord added to their number day by day those who are being saved. So I submit to you that in the pattern of Jesus' own relationship with his disciples, in the very creation of the whole cosmos by Father, Son, and Spirit, in the story of Adam and Eve, and in the very story of our own bodies, in the story of the mustard seed, and in the story of Abraham's call, and in the story of the early church, we see a pattern where love at the center becomes the key to the irresistible expansion outward. And I think this is kind of what I'm going to call the physics of love. It starts at the center and expands outward. A couple years ago, we had a toilet that was leaking at our former church, and we didn't know about it. Until one morning we came to church, and there was water all dripping through the Sunday school rooms down below, which we had to tear a large part of our church apart, and it took us about a year to put it back together. I've never forgotten that one leaking toilet. And I tell you the leaking toilet story because it was a small little leaking toilet, and water has a way of finding its way from one simple source all the way outward through all the cracks and the crevices, down through the rafters, down, down, until everything was changed. That's a negative way to tell a good thing. Love expands irresistibly from a center. And I just couldn't help but want to play with that image with you today. Rod, will you come and join me? Rod is a physics teacher, and today's message is called The Physics of Love. I thought it would be so appropriate for Rod to join me, because I want us not just to think of this just purely conceptually. I want us to have an experience of seeing what I'm talking about. I hold that in your hand. Yeah. I have diet tonic water with quinine. I don't even know what quinine is. It sounds very scary. But this is carbonated water, and we're going to just simply, would you hold this, Rod? Hey, would you open that? Yeah, yes, okay. We, Louise and I did some experiments this week. Good. Seriously.
Whatever happens next is not my fault.
Okay, okay. Okay, now open it, but open it slowly because it's very bubbly. Okay, just be careful there. Okay, great. So in my hand, you know, you've all seen this already, I'm sure, but I just want to experience this together. These little mementos, little candies, are created in such a way that when they hit the carbonated water, there's a process called nucleation. Did you know that?
I did know that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Woo! Okay.
It's also called laundry.
Okay. Those of you on property, Steve, Mike, there's no sugar in this water. This is going to be great. If we have a problem up here, it's going to be very clean. Okay. This Highland is you, the Momentos. This is you. All right?
It's just Mentos, by the way.
It's not Momentos? It's just... Okay, thank you. He is such a good partner. These are just Mentos. All right, I just put Julie in there. Hey, Ramona, there's you. There's George. Here comes George right here. Okay, here's the Seaholms right here. Here's Pastor Dave. Holly, there you go. All right, Heidi and Andrew are coming in. Here's Heather. Okay, here we are, man. Okay, now, I want to tell you what happens if we love each other.
We do each other's laundry.
Okay. Here we go, baby. Living example of love. Go.
Oh, that wasn't as bad as I was afraid it was going to
be. No. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Whoops. And your hands shouldn't even be too sticky.
No.
Now, Rod, thank you so much. That's totally cool. Oh. Yeah. Just having fun, but I wanted you to see something. The chemistry of us coming together to take seriously Jesus' command to love each other creates a reaction that cannot be contained in the little bottle of this room. It can't. If we really love each other. And you say, what does love mean? Remember last week we talked about it. We used this definition that loving like Jesus means to freely and unconditionally lay down our lives to procure a true good for the beloved. That's this way that we're trying to get at what it means to truly love each other. Let me make three statements why I think this works. Three principles. I'm going to call this the principle of, let's see, I have a clicker somewhere. Bob's got my back up there. Let's go back. The principle of integrity. Here's how I think it works. This is why I think love explodes outward. First of all, the principle of integrity says simply this. Imagine a person that is abusive to his wife and then goes across the street and kindly mows his neighbor's lawn. Nothing feels right about that, does it? How can you not love the one right in your own home and then go across and do the kind deed for the person across the street? There's something hollow in that. Because the way that we're wired is this, is that love builds up from the center. It has to have what we call integrity. It has to be built correctly. And it builds correctly. If we love one another, we are built to expand. Principle integrity. Here, second principle, what I'll call the fish and loaves principle. Remember Jesus took bread and fish, very small amount, and he broke it, and somehow it kept multiplying? I think that's a beautiful picture to say this, that when love and act love, which is a form of breaking, which is a form of surrendering and giving and laying down our lives, happens, it releases this, what I'm going to call, and help, please don't think I'm sounding new agey here, but some kind of core energy at the center of the created world that was made by a God who created a world out of the overflow of love. Something is released when we break the fish and loaves of our lives, and it expands because that's the very nature of how the world is wired. Something like an atomic, right? Like an atomic bomb, you split the atom and energy is released. I think there's something like that truly in this nature called love. And thirdly, I'll say one more thing. What I'm going to call it the centrifugal principle. Centrifugal has this idea that force throws us outward. Love is a centrifugal power throwing us outward. And I think for two reasons. Number one, when I love somebody else, it gives them a kind of capacity to pass it on. If you feel loved, truly loved, then you're not left grasping for it. You're filled in a kind of way that sets you up to go give that away. And it also gives a person courage. A loved person has capacity to love and courage to love. I love this particular verse. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort. Watch this relationship here, who comforts us in all of our affliction so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which ourselves are comforted by God. God loves us and pours into us because he loves us, but that love is never meant to be held in and just contain ourselves only. It's always meant to be given away. We're given so that we give away, and we actually have capacity and courage to do so. Here's the other piece of that, though, that I think is true. Love generates joy in the giver. And I get this from Jesus right after, actually in John 15, right before he gives the new command repeated, he says this: these things I have spoken to you that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full. How could it be that it's Jesus moving toward the cross in Hebrews chapter 12, 1 and 2, enduring such amazing suffering, could say this, or it could be said about him, that for the joy set before him, he endured the cross? How could that be true unless that in his very act of ultimate loving, the seed of joy remained burning and true? And so I think the reason that love expands is that when we give it away, it gives capacity and courage. And when we give it away, it gives joy back to us. And joy is contagious once we've tasted it. I was amazed. I was listening to a podcast yesterday, driving home, called On Being. Krista Tippett is a interviewer of people, and she was interviewing someone named John Paul Lederach, who's a professor emeritus of Notre Dame in their peace and justice program there. He's a well-known world expert on peacemaking in conflicted parts of the world. I have to tell you, I was just stunned listening to this podcast because I recognized the very truth that I'm telling you today in an absolute, arbitrary, and totally different context. And I couldn't help. I thought I had to just share a quote from that with you because I don't think there's any coincidences in the world. And I'm just listening to this guy, John Paul Lederach, speaking. And he was asking a question. A term he uses is called critical yeast in people. And she was asking, what does that mean to you? And he was saying this: so among the many things that I have a tendency to have some bias towards, my particular one says that I've just noticed how important it is to have small groups of people who have that quality of relationship so that they can serve in ways that begin to echo that out into larger groups. It's interesting. He says when they've watched peace movements fizzle, something began to happen and then it fizzled, they are unable to find at the bottom of those movements these core groups of people holding together in high quality relationships. One other thing he said in the podcast was this: look, it's not about quantity. The critical mass actually in physics is not the quantity. It's the quality of a particular interaction that creates the replication of energy. But we have underattended to creating the quality that recuperates the trust that we need to build what you call the connective tissue. And I know I'm pulling this a little bit out of context, but it was an amazing example to apply the very principle that I'm sharing with us out of the scriptures today for something as practical as peacemaking. He's worked in Latin America, particularly Nicaragua, in the conflicts there. And so I was so excited just to hear this. I was just like a buzzing bee. I was so excited. So here's how I want to end us today. No wonder Acts 1:8, Jesus is about to go to heaven. What's the last thing he tells his disciples? He ends with the very paradigm that we've been talking about. He says this: you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you, and you shall be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. We see that same concentric pattern in Jesus' mission call to his church: Jerusalem and then Judea and Samaria to the uttermost ends of the earth. Here's what I want to say to us, Highland Covenant Church. 7 weeks with you. I'm still such a newbie. I'm getting to know you, and I am loving, absolutely loving being here. Can't believe that God orchestrated it so perfectly for me to come here, for your acceptance of me to come. And now let me tell you what I see. I see 120 beautiful people who have a history of loving each other and who are being called even deeper into loving one another for the sake of the world. And I want to remind us this, that the very first community of Christians was 120 people. That started the whole thing. So Highland, we're not just some little obscure little group off to the side. We're 120. And our task, the challenge, the call of the scriptures, the pattern from beginning to now, let's love one another. Let's pour ourselves into that. And who knows what God does next? I don't say this because I'm interested in church growth. I don't say this because I'm interested in anything other than being faithful to a core principle and seeing what happens. Because I want us all to feel like Rod felt in his hand, the dropping of the Mentos into the tonic water. I want to see God at work. Listen, I've been in ministry long enough, and I'm tired of trying to create something that God, it looks like we said God did. Not interested. We can fake a lot of things and we can pretend that God did it. Not so interested. I'm hungry for God's true movement. And I dare us to believe it comes absolutely and incredibly simply through us loving one another. Pressing in to loving one another. Jesus, I'm just going to ask for us right now that you would do this for us, that you would You'd give us a vision that it's not very complicated. That we don't have to figure out a whole bunch of crazy things to do to try to make ourselves significant in the world. All you're asking for us to do is to love each other in this room the way that you loved your disciples. And you promise that if we do that, we will not be able to contain the joy and the power that rises from this place. And you can take it wherever you want to. We have no agenda other than to be faithful to you. So we ask you, have your way with us.